Settling down and spreading our roots were a lot harder than it is now. There were natives everywhere, and it was hard for us to find natives that accepted us on their land. But what would happen when we attempted to settle somewhere and we ran out of food? The natives would only be nice for so long because all we were giving them in return was diseases. Hey guys, and welcome back to my podcast. I'm your host, Lulu, and it's great to talk to everybody again. How was everybody's week? I had a busy week with Thanksgiving and everything, but, you know, it was pretty good here. So, I don't think I have really any updates for you guys. Just so you know, my heater was not turned on before I came down here, so it is freezing in my studio. So, if you, like, feel like I sound weird, it's because I'm literally freezing to death over here, but it's fine because we're still here and we're here to talk about a monstrous mystery. It has been a long time since we did one of these. The problem with a lot of mysteries is they're not really what I like. I didn't realize that when I first started looking into a lot of mysteries. A lot of them are, you know, murders, which would be a Sunday upload. A lot of them are kind of not super interesting, and so it takes me a lot of time to find one that really like speaks to me. And then on top of that, a lot of these mysteries are very, very old. Because of that, there is a lot of information that, I'm gonna be honest, you guys, I find very boring in them. This one in particular, I read probably over 30 pages of information to give you one episode, and a lot of that stuff, as I get it, if you're into history, like, it's probably going to be really interesting to you. But for somebody like me, I didn't need to know about all of these 30 different people back in England that really had no part in the mystery. So I really had to weed through a lot of that to get you guys a good episode, at least that I think is good, about the lost colony of Roanoke. As I said, there was a lot of things I had to go through. If you look this up, you kind of get the gist of it, and it's really quick, but it just wasn't enough to, you know, have an episode to share with you guys, and it is pretty interesting. And so I did weed through a lot of the history stuff to really get you guys a good episode. I do have my own personal feelings on what happened to this lost colony, but I don't want you guys to think that that's me saying this for sure happened. If you believe something else happened, great, and that is amazing, and I'm glad that we, you know, have a society where we can disagree and still be friends. So, let's get into today's episode because I really have no updates for you guys. I've got my Pepsi here, I'm freezing cold, and I'm ready to talk about a monstrous mystery. So as I said, this was very, very old. This happened a very long time ago. So in 1578, Queen Elizabeth would grant an exploration to colonize other territories. She had some people that worked with her or served with her, and they decided that they needed to spread out the English roots a little more, and she agreed. The responsibility would be handed to one man that would end up dying before they could really do any of this colonization. When he died, he asked Queen Elizabeth if she would split it between his two brothers. One of them was a half-brother, one of them was a full-blood brother. Now, I'm not gonna dig too much into the full-blood brother that had a part of this, because he's not really part of this mystery. It did sound like he decided, instead of colonizing, that he wanted to map out different areas so that if something happened with the Spanish or anything like that, that they could get away from them. And so that's why he wasn't really part of the colonization. The half-brother, though, whose name was Walter Raleigh, I think is how you say that. I would say that very wrong if I sounded that out, but I just looked it up and that's what they said. Anyways, his name is Walter. He is really who this story is, you know, around, who started this. Walter decided that his next steps were going to establish this colony somewhere, and he was afraid that if he didn't start this soon, he was going to lose that opportunity because Queen Elizabeth was getting kind of bored with the idea. Nobody was really working on it, so why would she continue to give people these permissions if they never did anything? So he got right on it. He decided he needed to scope out a place and he needed to do it quick. But Queen Elizabeth would not allow him to leave her side. Basically, he was responsible for colonizing, but he wasn't allowed to leave. So Walter was responsible now for finding other people who would go and take these short expeditions and scope out different places, draw a map to them, write down, you know, about the natives, about the land, and then they would bring this back to him. He would look over it, and then if he found any areas that sounded like a place they could colonize, he would go and talk to Queen Elizabeth and get the okay. Now, if you go into some of the history parts of these, it talks about the trips that didn't come with anything and explains where they went, why they didn't work. I'm not going to talk about those today. That doesn't matter. We're going to talk about the, you know, place that sounded like the perfect place. When the man that was responsible for this voyage would basically land on this piece of land, it was beautiful. He wrote about how amazing it was, all the good things around there. And then he went and met the natives. The natives were friendly. They were okay with them moving in. They all got along really, really great. On top of that, the natives, you know, they had grown a ton of food. They were thriving there. It was clear that this was an area that they could move into and thrive. And the neighbors would accept them. So they would load back up and head back to England. They also invited two of the natives to come back to England with them to meet the queen and to talk to, you know, basically their boss to decide if this is where they were going to go. Two of the natives agreed and they sailed back to England with them. And in 1584, they landed and began to tell Walter about their voyage. This expedition brought back the perfect place in Walter's mind. It was beautiful. Everybody got along. Everything sounded like it was going to be where they needed to go. And so Walter would bring this up to the queen and ask her if they could colonize. After she looked over the reports and heard the stories, she decided that Walter was right. This would be the perfect place to colonize and spread out their roots. From this point, they had to get there. Of course, colonizing wouldn't take five people and no supplies, and so they would load up seven ships. These seven ships would carry men, women, supplies. They carried everything that they would need to build a small colony and be successful there and to really get them started. These ships are referred to as Tiger, Roebuck, Red Lion, Elizabeth, Dorothy, and then there were two other small ships that don't sound like they had names. When they were ready to go and they had everything, they would say goodbye to Queen Elizabeth, and this fleet of ships would start its travel to their new land. Immediately, though, they would hit a storm. The storm would separate Tiger, one of the larger ships, from everybody else, and it would sink one of those smaller ships that didn't have a name. This wasn't entirely uncommon, and they knew that they were probably going to lose at least a ship or two on their travels there. They had a meeting point where all the ships knew where to sail to and wait for the rest of the fleet to show up if they got separated. Because Tiger got separated from the rest of the fleet, Tiger was responsible for getting to that meeting point pretty quick so that the fleet didn't leave that ship behind. Because if they thought the Tiger got sunk, they're not going to wait there forever. Tiger actually made it to the meeting point before everybody else and waited for more ships to show up. Elizabeth would be the next one to show up, but none of the other ships were with Elizabeth. Elizabeth had gotten separated as well. They assumed they had all been sunk, which is not a great sign, but they decided to wait a little longer. Finally, Roebuck, Red Lion, and Dorothy would arrive. Red Lion would inform them that they had some difficulties and they had to send 30 of their men ashore and left them somewhere random. This honestly should have been their first red flag to turn around and start again later. But they continued to press on because they still had a lot of their ships, they still had food and people, and Basically, the ship that had all of their food on it was still standing, and that was the most concerning thing. That was the most important ship that really couldn't go down. So they continued to sail to their new land. Then Tiger would get stuck on a shoal, I think is how you say it. This is basically a piece of submerged land. Usually it's a ridge or a bank of some sort. And when the tide is low, you can usually see it and walk on it, and you know what I mean? But when the tide is high, it's nearly impossible to see because the water is over it, especially when you're in a very large ship. So Tiger didn't see this. They didn't go around it, and they hit it dead on. Pretty fast, too. This basically destroyed the ship and ruined almost all of their food supply that the ship was bringing. This is a big deal, you guys. But the colonists, they thought they had enough to get through winter and then they could get well established, so they kept going. Tiger stayed behind though and began to repair the ship so that they could bring that food that would get them through the winter still, because they believed they could still repair this ship. Now they did. They repaired Tiger enough to sail, and they would start just a little bit after the rest of the fleet and follow behind them, carrying the food that was left over. Now, before this big voyage with the fleet of ships that were bringing everything to get well established, they were not aware that these bodies of land so close to the tops of the water existed. Because the first voyage was done in a small ship. A small ship could have gone over that just fine, but the big ships couldn't. That was a little worrisome. They were not aware of that in the first place, and that meant that they couldn't really bring big ships into this land without a risk of sinking them. Finally, Tiger would meet back up with Roebuck and Dorothy, and the rest of the expedition would land and settle. They lost a lot of ships, they lost a lot of people, and they lost almost all of their food. They had enough food to make it through the winter, or so they thought, and they figured that because their supply ship was there and they could still build the homes that they would live in, that they would make it through the winter just fine. It would be hard, but then they could really get established and thrive here. A man whose name was John would take the fastest of the three ships, and he would sail to England to inform Elizabeth of the travels and that they had made it safe to the new land. As they were taking the supplies and food off the ship, they realized that they had lost a lot more than they originally thought they did. They didn't have enough food for all of the men that had sailed out there, all of the men and women, and they decided they could only keep 100 men on this new land to start to become established. Everybody else was to help unload the ships, get back on the ships, and ride back to England. They had also decided as soon as they got back to England, they would make another ship, a second ship, that would bring supplies, food, and more people. Therefore, they could really get a good footprint there. Then, as soon as everything was set up and ready to go, the people would load up onto the ships and leave, with the intent on coming back very soon. These plans were set in stone, though, before the Spanish had begun to take English commercial ships. When that started, they were unable to leave when they wanted to because Elizabeth did not want her commercial ships being taken, and they were forced to wait in England until Elizabeth said it was okay for them to head back out, which didn't happen. This also meant that the path they had to take to get home would drastically change to try to avoid the Spanish ships, and it took them a lot longer to get back to England, and then Elizabeth was not comfortable with them leaving. The people on the land were not made aware of this, of course, because the people on the ships didn't know about this until they were on their way home, and they were waiting for that ship to arrive with more supplies and more people. They would elect a mayor. At this point, they would name their land, their town, and where they were settling. Of course, as you know, they would name it Roanoke. But then days ticked by, and weeks, and months, and their ship never showed back up. They began to get a little worried and decided that they needed to start planning for it to not show up. They would try as hard as they could to catch enough fish and oysters and hunt deer so that they could make it through the winter because they were running dangerously low on food. On top of that, they began to talk to the natives and told them of their worries and what had happened. The natives were kind enough to share food with them, most of the time just corn, and it sounded like they were gonna make it through. But then the natives started to get sick with a cold they had never had before. It was killing them off, and the people that it wasn't killing off were bedridden. They couldn't move, which meant they didn't have as many hands out tending to the corn and hunting, and they in turn didn't have a lot of food for themselves. This began to worry the natives, and they realized that all of them, because there was different colonies of natives across this land, were getting sick. And there was a pattern. After the English would stop in and visit them and talk to them about food and trade or just ask for more food, the natives got sick. They had a feeling that they were making them sick, or that there was a supernatural force that was making them sick, because the English were not supposed to be there, and that something was punishing them. Either that, or the English were purposely making them sick and killing them off so that it was easier for them to take over. This, of course, was not the case. Nowadays, we do believe that because the Englishmen had gone through smallpox and influenza, that we had that virus. And when we would go and talk to the natives, we spread those viruses to them because they were dormant in our systems and they were never dormant in the natives. And that is what was making them so sick and killing them. That was just what we think nowadays, but we know it wasn't a supernatural force, and we know that the English weren't purposely doing it to them. Either way, this not only cut down their food supply for the natives, but it also cut their trust down. And then one of the tribe's most important people would get sick, and they tried everything that they could to heal him, but he wasn't getting better, so they finally turned to the natives because they felt like the natives brought this over and asked them for help. The natives would pray. They would pray over his body to their god, and then suddenly he began to feel better, which did not help the fact that the natives thought they were doing it on purpose. Now all of the natives and the tribes believed that the English were making them sick on purpose, and they needed to stay away. So they tried to start to step back from the English, but the English needed food. They kept coming and coming and coming and begging and begging. And it was hard for the natives because they didn't have enough food in the first place for them, and now they had the English begging for food. This led to a ton of strain between the English and the natives because they felt like they needed to share their food with the English, and the English just kept begging for food. They did make it through the winter though, and it seemed like everything was okay, but their ships still never showed up, and they were still asking the natives for food. At this time, they started to not get along. One of the tribe leaders told the Englishmen that there was a king on the other side of the island, and he had a ton of food and money and whatever, and that if they traveled to him, he would give them enough food to allow them to survive until their ship arrived or until they could get well established. This, though, was a wild goose chase, you guys, and it was their attempt to get the Englishmen away from their camp, basically, so that they could ambush them while they were walking in the desert and kill them. They managed to walk by a couple of tribes who were under the impression that they were there to steal their food, and so they blocked them all out. Nobody wanted to talk to them because nobody was getting along with the English at this point. The English would get ambushed, but they would manage to get away and head back to their settlement. This is when they discovered that everybody that was left behind, the men that were left behind, the women, the children, had thought that they had died because the natives had come and visited them and informed them that they had died on their voyage out to meet the king. This native that was watching over them and was in charge of the colony had decided that this was enough proof, all of this and winter with the English, to prove that they were a threat. They were there to take over, they were there to take all of their food, and he instructed his people, because they had actually lived right above them and were watching them, to leave that settlement and start a new settlement somewhere else. They had to get away from them. They would take their fishing containers, break anything of theirs that was still there so the English couldn't use it, pack up, and leave. This leader also informed his tribe that they were no longer allowed to share or sell or trade food with the English. They didn't want the English to come around anymore, and they were not allowed to help the English. Then they began to spread this to the other natives, that they were a danger and they were not supposed to sell food or share food. And they were basically going to leave the English to starve to death. And they started to. They ran out of food rapidly. They had no means of getting food anymore. Their ship was still nowhere in sight. So they began to break off in groups to search out the natives that had moved away and beg them for food. Sometimes they would get food here and there, but most of the time the natives would turn them away and tell them that they were no longer sharing with them and they didn't have enough food. One thing that I hadn't mentioned yet, because I just hadn't, the English had had one of the natives being held hostage. They were not all in the right. They held this man hostage and this man was giving them information about the natives. He also informed the colonists that the natives planned on meeting on a certain day because they were going to discuss a war against the English. This, of course, worried the English, and they began to spread false information about how there was an English fleet showing up that was to protect them so that the natives couldn't come down and attack them. They also, at this point, decided to attack and kill one of the tribe members who was telling everybody that they were a threat. And then they would take his head and mount it outside of their colony on the fence as a warning sign to other natives. You can already see how they were not getting along and things were getting messy. Finally, one of the other colonists, the mayor actually, had made contact with another Englishman in an attempt to get help because they needed supplies and food. And Sir Francis Drake answered. He had raided multiple places on his voyages. He had gotten refugees, slaves, and hardware that he was bringing back to England. He agreed that he was going to leave behind 4 months of food because he was going back to England and no longer needed it anymore. Unfortunately, though, the ship that carried this food was hit by a hurricane and it took it all away from them and was lost at sea, basically sunk. There goes more food that they needed. Now the Englishmen, out of food, out of resources, out of help, decided they needed to accept defeat. It was time for them to leave. They would leave behind all of the slaves and the refugees that Sir Francis Drake had brought in this colonist. They would also leave behind a few colonists that decided to stay, including the mayor's wife and child. And they would get up onto this boat and sail back to England. The mayor promised to return with food and with help, but they weren't aware of the Spanish taking ships. When they arrived back to England, they brought back tobacco and potatoes and corn that the natives had grown there, that they didn't have there. Days after they left, the supply ship that was bringing them food docked. If they had been able to hold on for a couple more days, Roanoke would have gotten the food that they needed to survive. It had a year's worth of supplies on this ship, you guys. There was 400 men that were going to beef up the colony and help protect them. But when they docked, they couldn't find anybody. They couldn't find the camp. They couldn't find their people. They didn't know most of them had left at this point to go back to England. They pulled aside three natives and interrogated them. All the natives said was that the Englishmen had evacuated and left the island and they were no longer there. Then one of the tribes would say that they wanted to have a peaceful talk about what happened. And instead of a peaceful talk, one of these members would pull out a wooden sword and stab and kill one of the Englishmen there. The supply ship and 400 men would load back up and leave with their food and their men because they didn't see anybody but natives on the land. The mayor, after bringing back the tobacco and corn and potatoes, talked about what had happened and that he needed supplies and men immediately. But Elizabeth informed him that the Spanish were attacking them. They were taking their ships. They were sinking them, they were taking people, and that Elizabeth was not allowing anybody to leave who had ships that could be used in a war if she needed the protection. They were not allowed to go back to Roanoke, regardless on who was still out there. The mayor waited every single day until Elizabeth would finally give him the okay. I saw two different numbers. I saw 2 years and I saw 3 years. Regardless of which one it was, a minimum of 2 years later, Elizabeth had decided that he could head back. He took a ship that couldn't be used in a war, a smaller ship with less men and food, and she would allow him to head back. And when he finally docked and walked ashore, his colony was gone. He searched and searched and searched, because remember, his wife and child were left here. And when he finally came across where they had settled, where their homes were built, where they lived, everything had been dismantled, almost carefully. The homes that were once there were empty and overgrown. There is evidence that nobody had been there for a very, very long time. And then he discovered one set of human bones. This worried him, of course, because there was a lot of things that could have happened in that 2 to 3 years that he was gone. He had informed them that if the natives showed up and tried to overtake them, that they were to carve a cross on one of the trees to let him know when he came back. So he began looking at all of the trees and the posts, trying to find any sort of hint as to where his colonists went. All that there was a word, Croatoan, in one of the posts. He took this as the fact that his colonists decided to relocate somewhere else, somewhere a little more accepting, and he had to find them. Now, this was a name of one of the islands that was near them, and none of the ships that were left there, because they had small ships at that point, were still there, and everything that they had buried, so his belongings and a couple other things to keep them safe, had been dug up and ransacked. So he was under the impression that they left. He began walking, and near one of the trees, he would find a CRO carved into it, which further made him feel like they had relocated onto this island. So they headed that way. They got onto their ship, their smaller ship, and they would sail to this little island to see if that is where his colony had relocated. Of course, they were worried that the natives had killed this man. The bones that they found came from a murder, and this was solidified when they docked at one point and one of his other Englishmen had gotten off the boat to search for crabs and was killed by a native because they didn't want the English on their island. They couldn't leave their boat, and they would continue to sail looking for any sort of proof, and then near the end of the night, they would see columns of smoke from a fire. They felt like this was the colonists, and maybe they were constantly moving to stay alive, moving to stay away from the natives waiting for him to show up and save them. But because they had lost a man already, and it was proof that the natives didn't want them on their land, they would wait until morning to look into it. Once they arrived at the area, there was no sign that anybody had ever been there, and they couldn't find the area that the smoke had come from. Later that night, they were sailing around again, and they saw another column of smoke. They decided to investigate again, finding nothing once again. They would try to cross through this island and lose another life. They would get back on their boat and decide they were going to sail to the north end of the island to see if maybe that's where they were. There was once again another column of smoke. Somebody was moving, and they were hoping that it was their colonists. But as they got close to this column of smoke, night fell again, and they decided it was unsafe, and they did not want to risk any more lives, and they needed to wait until morning. They would stay up all night and loudly sing English songs in hopes that if it was their Englishmen, they would hear these songs and come to them, know that they were back, but nobody ever showed up. In the morning, they walked onto the land and got to the spot that the fire was. They found it this time, but nobody was there. The only thing that was there was fresh tracks, so they knew they weren't going crazy, and somebody was on the move. They really, really, really wanted to find their colonists, you guys. But it had been 3 years. And then a storm hit and blew their ship off course. At that point, they decided to head back to England. But because they couldn't prove that all of the colonists had died, they could still claim the land. And they would begin some expeditions here and there to search for these colonists. But they were never able to find where they disappeared to, and they were never able to find bones or any proof that a fight had happened. On the very last expedition, they would end up docking their boat in an unknown place due to the weather, and they would be attacked by the natives. The leader, who was searching for his colonists, the mayor of the old colony, was killed that day. The natives allowed some of the crew to survive and dock their boat and leave so that they could tell England what had happened and to stay away from that island. At this point, the mayor was dead. Nobody really cared to find the colonists anymore. He was the last person who wanted to find them, probably because his wife and his child were out there still. So they stopped their expeditions. An interesting thing that they learned, though, is at one point, John Smith would come across a colony of natives. They had very similar things to Englishmen, including the clothes that they wore and the way that they were building their homes. After he would see this, he would send a letter back to England to inform them in hopes that maybe his colonists were still out there. This map is lost today. It sounds like we have a copy of it, but not the original. And then they sent out two more search parties, and they were unable to locate this tribe, and they headed home. In May of 1609, word had spread that they were all killed off by the natives. But there was never any proof that they had been murdered. Even in the old colonists, there was never any bloodstains anywhere or burned down houses. None of that. There was one pile of bones, and that was it. Even in modern day research, we still haven't found any proof or any clues on what happened to the colonists. The place that they did stay at is now a tourist site, but they've done some digging there. Besides finding that one pair of bones and native bones, they have found nothing towards the colonists. No more Englishman bones. Nothing. The colonists of Roanoke disappeared completely. Of course, we have some theories. The number one theory is that they did relocate. This theory comes from the fact that there was no evidence of war or fight, and that there were no bones found. There was also no boats found. A lot of their things had been taken and dismantled, like they had taken them to a new location. Other people believed that there was a war, that the natives were mad at the Englishmen and wanted them gone, and kidnapped them and murdered them. Either they discarded their bodies in a fashion that we've never been able to find. Maybe they threw them in the ocean. We don't know. And that is why we've never been able to find anything. But that they were murdered by all of the natives. Another theory is that the Englishmen that were left knew that they weren't coming back on another ship. They knew that they weren't bringing food anytime soon. And they would integrate into the colonies of the natives. This one's a little hard to believe because the natives were so angry at the Englishmen, but I can see how women and children and possibly some men were accepted, especially if they told them that they had all left and they were going to die. I can see how a colony, I guess a native, you know, a native colony could be forgiving for a couple people to join them. That can also be why, even if they heard them singing English songs, they never responded to them because they were part of the tribe now, and it's possible that after 3 years they loved the tribe more than living as an Englishman. So even though they heard the songs of them coming back for them, they didn't want to leave because that was their new home. There are some sources throughout history that claim to see English-looking people in native tribes or very light-skinned natives, almost like they had parents who were one white and one native. And this does seem to be most of the historians' beliefs, that they were able to integrate into these colonies and they never wanted to leave. This doesn't have any evidence, though. It's never been solidly confirmed. The last really strong theory is the one that I lean more towards. The natives attacked the colonists, or they got scared that they were going to be attacked. The colonists would either take down parts of their homes to build more ships, or just dismantle them for supplies. They would then load up on the small ships that they had and the little tiny bit of food that they could muster up, and they would head out in hopes to get back to England. On their way back to England, they would all sink and would all be lost at sea. I lean more towards that one, in my opinion, but I can see how all the other theories could have possibly happened. Either way, the lost colony of Roanoke is still a mystery. Nobody knows what happened to the colonists, and honestly, you guys, we might never know. It took them 2 to 3 years to return to help the colonists. I honestly don't know what they expected to happen after 3 years. They were struggling in the first place. They struggled to get there. What made them think that 3 years down the line, the colonists would still be there? To me, I'm not shocked that they disappeared. This podcast may contain false or misleading information. If you are interested in knowing more about any stories shared on this podcast, I highly recommend doing your own research. All listeners are advised that these are stories and folktales. The information shared must be taken carefully and skeptically, because you never know what could be real and what's just a story. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.